All right, so you are listening to WGXC ICRA 90.7 FM radio for open ears. This is Galen Joseph Hunter, and I am here with Sally Ann McIntyre and Campbell Walker. And let's have a listen. Was an excerpt. Sally,
hi.
Campbell, welcome to Wave Farm.
Hi, thank you, Galen. So nice to be here. We've been hanging out here for a few days now. It's been really wonderful to finally make it over. should I introduce what we've just been listening to?
Tell us what we just heard.
That was the first few minutes, or the first couple of minutes of a track that I released. It's actually a really pragmatic title. It's called The New Zealand Storm Petrel, which is probably not as poetic as the titles I generally tend to use, but it was part of a series of releases by Flaming Pines for a tiny little 3-inch CD series that they did called Birds of a Feather. Well, Kate Carr did. That's her label. And she asked me to be part of it. And so I had to choose a bird. I had to choose a bird to focus on. And I work with birds a lot in my work. And I thought, well, a lot of other people did birds that they knew for this series. Somebody did the phoenix, a sort of mythical bird. So I thought I'd do something that was slightly in between. I focused on the New Zealand storm petrel, which was a bird that, like a lot of New Zealand birds, had been really affected by the environmental catastrophe of colonization. And it had disappeared off the face of the earth in the 1880s, I'm wanting to say. And it's a pelagic bird. It's a storm petrel, so they live. A pelagic bird is a bird that lives in the ocean and doesn't really come down to land except to breed. And so they hadn't been seen since like the 1800s, but they were spotted through radio telemetry tracking by ornithologists in, I think, 2013. So I wanted to do a homage to that process of kind of this. Lazarus taxon, they're called in conservation or just biology generally. Like they kind of come back from the dead, but also the kind of weird friction that's in that discourse around maybe, you know, the birds knew where they were all along and mm-hmm. it's just humans that kind of lost sight of them for 150 years. So that piece was made before their call had been recorded. So I didn't really have a reference for their actual call. Oh, so I was very interested in the fact that there was no recordings of what they actually sounded like.
So what year was this piece?
2013.
Oh, so it was in the same year.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you, the call, when you actually heard the recording, was it a surprise? Was it?
It sounded like a seabird. It sounded like, you know, the kind of high squeaky tones. Like
surprising other, in its unremarkability.
In its unremarkability, yeah. I mean, something that's so fetishized maybe because it's kind of special, but it's really like, our attitudes to nature being what they are, things very quickly become normalized. So I think now it's been recorded, it's back in the lexicon of the taxonomy of New Zealand nature, that bird. But yeah, in that slight liminal zone between when it was quote-unquote rediscovered and kind of back in our idea of natural kind of phenomena, there was this great little opportunity for me to look at the liminal zone between signal and its absence. And I guess that was the interest that I had.
Yeah. That's a good segue, I guess. But we were talking about what to open our conversation with, and you thought of this piece. And yeah. I think it probably draws quite well on your work at large, as well as what you're doing here at Wave Farm. And I'll, you know, we'll get into this more as the conversation continues. But Sally is our first resident of this season, kicking off the residency program. And we'll be doing a performance on Saturday as sort of a culminating action performance broadcast of her work here. So let's back up first, though, and introduce your work, your artistic practice to our listeners, if you could.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess, where do I start? I guess I should start with...
Where are you from?
Where am I from? Yeah, that's a good start. So I currently live in Melbourne, or Naam, as it's increasingly known as, which is the indigenous name for the city of Melbourne. But I've lived the last 10 years before I moved to Melbourne. I moved to Melbourne for teaching, actually. I'm teaching at the University of Melbourne and various other places. But I lived in New Zealand in the South Island, or Te Wai Ponamu, in Dunedin for 10 years. So that's kind of where I feel like I'm from. So a lot of the work that I've done with radio art, I guess, sort of started in New Zealand, and it's sort of focused around New Zealand spaces. So yeah, me and Campbell, we've recently moved to Australia. So we've been there since 2019, just before the really long lockdowns in the pandemic there. So that was an interesting timing because we got locked into our very small apartment for 2 years.
And so, yeah, you've alluded to this, that you were doing radio work in New Zealand. Mm. And is this, what year did your kind of other name, Radio Suggest, pop up?
Yeah, right. Radio Suggest emerged probably around 2006. Because I started in radio in the 90s when I was a student at Canterbury University. I guess like a lot of people who end up doing maybe kind of experimental radio, I started in student radio. Like I had an experimental music show called Rotate Your State, which I inherited from a couple of other people I knew when they left town. And I did that for a few years. I did an arts radio show on, it was, the station was RDU 98.5, yeah. So I was hanging out there for a while and really loved the space of being on air. And I think when I lost the opportunity to do those shows, I was already part of an artistic community that was quite focused around sound art in the South Island of New Zealand. And there's lots of people there who were very interested in experimental media art, like people like Zeta Joyce and Adam Willits were working as Ethermap, and there was various other people in the Aotearoa Digital Arts Network who were doing lots of experimental work, and they had connections to, yeah, I guess the wider networks of media arts, and one of those connections was Tetsuo Kagawa. So he came to New Zealand a few times, and I did a workshop with him in 2006 in New Plymouth, which was based around a media art show that had been curated by a woman called Mercedes Vicente, who had come over from here, actually, somewhere in America. I can't remember exactly where, but I was an intern at that gallery working in the Len Lai collection.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was really great. So I was doing curatorial studies at the time. My degree was in art history, and I'd kind of decided to do sort of media art curation. So yeah, I worked in the Len Lai Center for a while, and I'm still a massive fan of Len Lai.
Like, as am I.
Yeah, well, great.
We'll have to talk more about that.
Let's talk more about Len Lai. Yeah, I just did an introduction to a short series of his films like about a month ago in Melbourne. Yeah. So it's still very much on the Len Lai tip. Big fan girl here.
Our listeners, not Len Lai, but Tetsuo Kagawa, there's a wonderful kind of stinger that plays frequently on WGXE with Tetsuo talking about this idea of like low power repetition and networks of micro radio. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting distracted by Len Lai, but yeah, I should talk about Tetsuo because Mercedes Vicente, who was a curator at the Govett Brewster Gallery, where the Len Lai Center is also based, she did this amazing show that was called From Mini FM to Hacktivists. Brilliant. And I reviewed it because I was an art critic at the time, I think for Flash Art or something, and I went up there and kind of had a look at the show and interviewed her. But then I did this workshop with Tetsuo because he was there as one of the artists. And that just totally changed my life. Like, absolutely. There was no looking back. Like, creating your own radio station, just seeing how simple that process was, and just that a whole idea of microcasting and, the access to the airwaves being something that was incredibly DIY and, yeah, I guess that whole history that you're alluding to as well.
And this idea of like being able to actually build a radio transmitter that's so small and so handcrafted that it immediately, you know, you start to think about sculpture and instrumentation and architecture. And
absolutely.
I feel like it's, yeah,
the tactility of it, yeah, for one thing, yeah, and just, yeah, the small scale of broadcast as well. Well, yeah, narrowcasting, yeah, I guess. Yeah, so I got really obsessed with that, and because I was quite nomadic at the time, I just got a quite good grant from Creative New Zealand for a book of poetry, and of course I never ended up writing that. I just became an experimental radio artist instead. I was traveling around the country, and I just took my radio station with me and was doing these little projects sort of in cafes or in nature, and just trying to sort of get to grips with that as a space. Mm-hmm. Because I'd always really loved being on air, and I thought, well, you know, being on air is a very embodied thing. It's great that you can take it with you in this sense. So I think that was probably the moment where I kind of started Radio Suggest, and I remember the first transmission that I did artistically was in Chicks Hotel in Port Chalmers in just outside Dunedin before I moved down there. And I just went around and I did this sort of weird experimental documentary where I interviewed a bunch of people and just played back up some recordings within the space of the bar. And it was almost like nothing was there. but it was just sort of like a lot of different fragments of local field recordings and people at the local hotel talking about art collections that they had. And yeah, and I think that sort of started the ball rolling, and I just got more and more kind of nuanced as I went on trying to figure out how to transform what I've been doing as a DJ, mm-hmm. like, because I've been DJing in ambient zones and kind of on the radio, and thinking, okay, I want to move into making and making my own, content, in the sense that I want to do recordings and I want to sort of get into field recording. So they segued together really nicely.
I'm putting you on the spot because we didn't plan this out too much in detail, but do you have anything audio-wise from that time that you might be able to share?
Let's see what I've got here. I probably don't have anything that old, and to be honest, it probably isn't very good.
That is absolutely fine. We can
I think the oldest thing I have that I've prepared to bring along today is actually, it's a recording I did in 2012 with a collaborator of mine called Lee Noyes, strangely enough, who was living in Dunedin for a long time. And the title of the project that I pitched to Wavefarm, mm-hmm. Ion and Bird, mm-hmm. is actually the title of this track as well. Like, this is where that title first appeared.
Well, I was hoping that we could listen to something and then shift into talking about what you're doing here. So maybe this
is it. So the recording that I made at Chick's Hotel in Port Chalmers, this is just down the road from that, in a place called Ravensbourne. It's on top of a little hill looking out to sea in Port Chalmers. And it's a beautiful landscape. And Lee had a yurt in his backyard, so we're kind of performing in the yurt. And there's some birds singing, but there's also a bit of instrumentation. It's a little bit, it's characteristic of the things I was doing probably about a decade and a half ago.
And how long is the track? Are we going to hear the whole thing or an excerpt?
It's quite long, so okay. I think a little excerpt would be fine. Yeah.
All right, so we'll have a listen, and I'm ready when you are, and then we'll come back and talk some more.
Okay.
right. So that was a bit of a melange of radio frequencies and percussion with Lee Noyes and Sally Ann McIntyre. Sally being in the studio live with me here. This is Galen Joseph Hunter. So Sally, what was the name of that piece again?
Its name was Ion and Bird.
And yes. It's relevant for many reasons, including that this is also the title of the project you're doing here while in residence at Wave Farm, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I sort of tend to reuse titles and extend projects for years on end. But with this one, I wanted to revisit this because I've always been really interested in this idea of the relationship that, well, the potential relationship that the ionosphere has to radio listening in a terrestrial way, and how that might be something that affects things in a sort of expanded sense that we can't really perceive. So I think I was starting to think through that, even though that track doesn't really have any very low frequency or ionospheric content. I was thinking through it, but it does have a 78 recording of some radio canaries from the 1940s. So I think the historical aspects of the work that I've been doing since then, I've kind of branched off in two different directions. Like one is towards media archaeology, like using 78 RPM and kind of wax cylinder material, often around extinct or kind of inaudible aspects of the New Zealand natural landscape. But I'm also very interested in this idea of radio as weather, or radio as landscape, or radio, natural radio. So I think this residency, like, I wanted to revisit this idea of birds navigating through electromagnetic sensing, or also through the idea of tracking. The album that I did with Lee is called To Orient Themselves with Coastlines, which is about birds navigating using infrasound, like the sound of waves, and looking at the map of the landscape as a sonic navigational kind of texture. But yeah, this idea of the ionosphere and birds listening to electromagnetic frequencies as they go on their long migrations was the concept behind, mm-hmm. I guess, the idea that I pitched to you guys. Yeah.
And coming this, so also this is the first time you've visited the Americas, right?
Yeah, it is, strangely, yeah.
And so an opportunity to really observe and experience and kind of think about, I imagine, a quite different birdscape.
Oh, you have no idea. I'm a bit of a bird nerd, so I do know the New Zealand and Australian birds pretty well, but I got here and I'm like, oh my God, it's a completely different language. Yeah, so embarrassingly enough, we've been using the Merlin app on my iPad to try and identify what birds we're listening to around the place here. And we've done a couple of field trips a sanctuary just outside New York where we were staying, and we went into Prospect Park, strangely enough, because it's a really important docking point for a lot of migratory birds. Mm-hmm. And it's actually pretty amazing how green spaces in cities tend to become very important for bird life, I guess within the anthropogenic landscape that humans have created. These are spaces that are a little bit safer, perhaps. But yeah, we did a lot of field recordings there, and I've been doing some field recordings here at Wave Farm, and we went on a little field trip the other day as well to a reserve nearby.
I think we're at the Mountaintop Arboretum, right?
Arboretum, yeah.
And we should give a shout out to Mayuko Fujino.
Mayuko was amazing. Yeah. What a great local voice for bird life. Yeah, so, she was brilliant.
The host of WGXE's Bequency, Mayuko, was kind enough to take Sally and Campbell on some a birding and listening expedition, right?
Yeah. We went up there, and we also, apart from doing some field recordings where I got a really great recording of a hermit thrush, which I might play you in a minute, We were also using an artist instrument that was here at Wave Farm by Owen Chapman.
And Victor Maison,
who did a residency last year, I understand, yeah, and took that up to that space. And it's a VLF receiver that is, I guess you use it by using, it sounds a bit invasive, but there's a screw that you can put into a tree, and then you can use the tree as an aerial. So it really suited the project I was doing. So it was really nice to be able to engage with that prior project at Wave Farm and just think about the way that trees, as well as birds, are always navigating this radio landscape, this natural radio landscape.
And when we talk about VLF, probably not everyone listening knows what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So maybe we can help illuminate or share what we're speaking of. So VLF is very low frequency, right? And when you're talking about natural radio, you're talking about really electricity in the air, and things like lightning would qualify, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I guess with using a very low frequency receiver, so the one that I took up from here, but I've also got one, like my first experience with very low frequency radio was corresponding with a guy called Stephen P. McCreevy and building one of his receivers, like as a kit set. And that's something I'm still using. It's a really great little device. So it allows you to listen to the upper magnetosphere or the ionosphere and listen to all the lightning strikes that are happening around the world within that space that kind of bounce off. There's a little pocket where they bounce between the ionosphere and the Earth, and you can tap into that listening, and it's really illuminating because it sounds like the sounds of those lightning strikes all around the world, which is what you normally hear. Sounds a bit like, I guess people talk about it as like frying bacon or something like that. This is a really beautiful crackle, but occasionally these other phenomena happen as well. And you can get really obsessed with this stuff, as many people do. So there's other phenomena, like sphericks are the most common ones that you hear, but there's also things called tweaks, which I've been able to record a few of those, and they sound a little bit like a frying bacon that's got a bit of a reverb on it, maybe. And then there's things called whistlers, which are these very falling tones, very, very beautiful. And then there's something called the auroral or even dawn chorus, which is the thing that I was able to record recently with the geomagnetic phenomena that was all around the world, and I guess everyone listening probably went out to see the aurora if they were able to, because that was a global event. There was a lot of coronal mass ejections from the sun and geomagnetic weather recently. So we, Campbell and I and another friend, drove out from our place in Melbourne, and we went down to the beach, and I took my very low frequency receiver and recorded this really incredible soundscape, which sounded, I guess it's called the auroral chorus. It's a really good name for it because it does sound a lot like birdsong. So, I mean, that's, I guess, the analogy that I'm using with this project, that the birds themselves, it's probably a fairly spurious or perhaps artistic connection to make, but I quite like doing these sorts of creative leaps with ideas, like the idea that maybe the birds are listening to this stuff because they navigate the, mm-hmm. the Earth with their migration routes using electromagnetism, and the analogy between birdsong and the auroral dawn chorus might be something to think through, I guess, artistically. It's an interesting leap.
Well, you know, there's another project here at Wave Farm, Here Goes Radio Telescope.
Yeah.
That has... yeah.
I love that project.
So it's right. So it's a listening station to the GOES 16 geostationary satellite, but there's this generative soundscape along with it, which is using MaxMSP to interpret the radio signals and compose with those radio signals. But the artists Heidi Nielsen and Harry Dove Robinson speak of the piece as if they're trying to, the composition is imagining what that satellite hears in space. So it's not so dissimilar from what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I guess there's a lot to be said for the idea that radio is not really human anyway. Like it's a very more than human medium, and there might have been ways of interacting with radio that very much predate certainly modernist human society, but maybe human society generally. So I guess it's the radio waves that are all around us are probably things that have been used in various ways, not simply by birds and trees, but maybe by planets, maybe
throughout enormous periods of time. So your interest in instinct, that which is extinct, I think clearly is tied into a fascination
scale,
with
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was thinking about this morning as I was preparing to talk on the radio here, and thinking about this tension that my project has between very small scale transmission, because I'm still using micro FM, and these really vast kind of scales. So I think I'm hoping that will resolve itself on Saturday.
Well, is there something we could listen to, and then we can move into talking about Saturday afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a little auroral fragment that I've been mucking around with as part of the preparation for this project. So I might just play a little bit of that. So partially compiled from some of the recordings I've been doing. And there's actually a New Zealand bird in this one. I'm going to use local birds in the performance on Saturday. But the correlation, I guess, will be kind of similar.
All right.
It starts quite quietly too.
So this is Galen Joseph Hunter. You're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. I am sitting here with Sally Ann McIntyre and Campbell Walker, and we've just been listening to a few minutes of VLF recording and field recordings in anticipation of Sally's public program on Saturday at 1 p.m. here at Wave Farm. And Sally, what will our guests hear either in person or on the radio?
Yeah, so it's a dual performance for two contexts, or maybe three if we count the online audience as well. So I've been collecting some of that audio that you just heard in raw form. I think will be used in the performance. I've been collecting field recordings locally of local birds, and I think that will also be part of the mix. There's a little bit of instrumentation that I recorded before I got here that I'm going to use in the mix as well, that is relating to some of these sounds in a poetic way. So it will be microcast through a couple of different frequencies on site. And I think that will be... there might be, I'm still figuring out what the frequencies are and how they relate conceptually to the project. My usual transmission frequency of 104.5 FM will be involved. I might also cast to an AM frequency so I can use one of the vintage kind of 1940s radios that are in the Wave Farm collection. I'm also going to be using some old Cornell 1930s 78 recordings that were recorded to acetate for a local radio station. So there'll be some old media as well, but there'll be a lot of VLF sounds and some bird song, and hopefully kind of a poetic kind of correlation between the two can be something that people will hear on site and on air.
Wonderful. Mm. And yes, so for our listening audience, this is kicking off our current residency program season. And this year's theme is this idea of live performance for an expanded studio audience. And what we mean by that is that the public is invited to come to Wave Farm and witness the performance in person. If you are listening and so inclined to find out more or interested in finding out more, you can go to wavefarm.org/visit and you'll see all the details there. So on this Saturday, we'll be inviting the public to join us in person starting at 11 a.m. We'll do a art park tour of the 13 installations. And then at 1 p.m., Sally will perform and do a live broadcast from 1 to 3. And then we'll follow that up with another opportunity for an art park tour. Mm-hmm. And as Sally alluded to, she wasn't not exactly quite sure what frequencies you're going to use yet locally, right? And also the location is still to be determined, because that's what this residency program season is about, is really being immersed in the area here, in the location of Wave Farm, and figuring out where in this kind of larger activated studio space your project belongs. So upon arrival, you'll be given directions or led to wherever that might be.
Mm, yeah, and I really love the idea that I don't quite know yet, because I think part of the residency for me so far has been to respond to the site and to really kind of get to know it. So I'm halfway through that process. By Saturday, it will be quite resolved, I think. I just got an interest in one of the sites that are in the middle of the park, but maybe also just here at the study center as well. So we'll figure it out. But I guess either way, there'll be an interesting nesting of radios on the radio, which is something else I really like doing. So I'll be microcasting to the local area, but that will itself be packaged up and broadcast over the larger kind of frequency that is the one we're listening to right now, I guess. Yeah, that we're sitting within. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And we so often talk about projects here, the installations especially, revealing what is otherwise unseen or unheard. And I'm just sitting here thinking about how exactly on point your project is with that notion. You've been spending time making recordings of the local bird sounds, and you'll be, I think, drawing attention or focus to them and amplifying them in a way that gives listeners and audiences a chance to hear them for the first time, maybe, or differently than before.
Oh, I really hope so, because I think my status as a complete outsider here is just making me listen quite differently to everyone else that will be probably attending as well. So maybe I can cause some new focus on things like, we heard some incredible owl sounds last night. Mm-hmm. It was extraordinary. And just even the local bird life here is so rich. Yeah, it's amazing. So I'll try and sort of honor the birds, the locals,
and that partnered with the VLF recordings you've been doing locally as well, right?
Yeah. So that's also, I guess, every time you do a very low frequency recording, it is very place based. So I think it's important to gather those materials and use them in the performance. So I think most of the things that you'll be hearing if you come along will be generated on site. Yeah.
Excellent. What else? Is there anything else that people should know about attending on Saturday or projects that you have coming up in the future? We always like to ask our visiting artists.
Yeah. Let's see. What am I doing in the future?
Well, we keep referring to this other party in the studio who's been quite silent.
Yeah, he has been quite quiet.
But he's Campbell Walker, who's sitting here documenting away and has been during your residency. And,
that's right.
Because it's sort of a moving image component to your project, right?
Yeah, that's right. And on that note, I guess I should mention a project that we have just finished doing that I'm going to be going to London after this residency is finished to present at a conference on field recording at the at CRYSUP at the London College of Communications called In the Field 2. And one of the projects that I'll be presenting there as part of their exhibition is a film that Campbell and I made of my work with extinct birdsong, a bird called the Huia. Again, it was never recorded. It went extinct in 1907 in New Zealand. It was a sacred bird to local indigenous people. And I made some wax cylinders out of notation from the 19th century. And that was a project I did in 2015. And then I took that back last year to the New Zealand landscape and played the wax cylinder, trying to destroy it, actually, in various locations where the bird was seen before it became extinct, and actually even after its extinction date. They were seen around the Wellington region. So Campbell and I went there and we sort of got a big... I guess it wasn't very big. It
found
was
a map of the places and navigated lagging 19th century
technology around the New Zealand landscape
up into the mountains and forests and things like that.
We took the bus. It was great.
Amazing.
Completely public transport or foot.
So Campbell documented me playing a 19th century wax cylinder into the New Zealand landscape.
In various parts of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And so that's probably, it's a project that's already happened, but it's something that I think we'll try and exhibit again. Yeah.
Hopefully somewhere in this country sometime too.
Oh, yeah. So. That'd be nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And where would people go to learn more about your work, Sally?
I have some documentation online at a fairly old blog site, which is discoverable by probably typing in the name Radio Suggest, and it's a blog spot. I'm probably going to update it at some point, but that's the repository of my archive there. I guess I'm also on social media. I have an Instagram account, but I've also got a Bandcamp as well. I don't have much there at the moment, but there might be more soon. There's other documentation in various places. Radio Suggest is the way to discover me, and that starts with a C. It's a reference to a dead poet in a film by Jean Cocteau from 1950. Which we probably don't have time to talk about now.
I did not know that that's what the reference was, but it's Radio Space Cegeste.
Yes.
Well, it has been such a pleasure having you here so far. And I can't wait for Saturday. And I'm wondering if you might be able to select just a little more sound to round us out of this hour.
Let's do that. And thank you so much, Galen. It's been an absolute pleasure being here. And it's been a bit of a dream to come to Wave Farm. So I'm going to end off with a track. It's the first track from an album I made from a residency on a bird sanctuary island 3 miles off the coast of Wellington called Kapiti. I was there in 2012, and this is the first track on an album that I made from shortwave tunings and other radiophonic interventions into a very remote landscape. It's called A Lagoon Considered Against Its Archival Image. So I think I'll end with that. It's also quite minimal and quite similar to things you might hear if you come along on Saturday.
Excellent.